Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
This is the PG episode of 100% Hockey.
It is?
And it's not your normal PG.
Now, you got to explain the PG to me, because I don't even know what you're talking about.
Really?
No.
It's the first episode post-Gretzky.
Oh.
that's where I'm going with it.
Well, yeah.
Made national news in Canada.
But you knew it would. If we asked him the right questions,
I went back and listened to it. I don't do it to every episode. I take copious amounts of notes. I'm a doodler and always writing things down. But I actually went back and listened to Wayne again for some of the conversation and discussion that we had, and it blows me away at his recall.
Yes.
Like the political stuff is one thing, but the recall of the game is incredible, and how he can take something and go three steps away from where you were even thinking you were going to end up.
So I after we did the show, I went and walked the dog, and when I walk the dog, I always think of, oh, there's another question I should have asked. Mm-hmm. And I, unlike you, I don't write anything down. And here's what I would have asked him. His son-in-law is a great golfer, Dustin Johnson. If you sit in a press room with Dustin Johnson after he plays a round and he shoots a 67, Dustin Johnson will tell you every shot of the 67. He'll tell you how much yardage there was. He will tell you what club he used. He will tell you how close he hit it to the pin. It's amazing. The golfer's recall is tremendous. I want to know if Wayne has a similar recall for goals. Does he have the recall? Now, you know, not the 895 or 894. I mean, that's not important. But would he have recall of 77 in the year he beat Espoo's record? Would he have recall of, you know, the 5 goals in 39 games night in Edmonton against the Flyers? Would he have recall of other big goals in his career? I remember we did a game in St. Louis where he scored twice off the faceoff, right off the faceoff, over the goalie's shoulder. And would
Sid does that every now and then.
Would he have recall of things like that? And I suspect he would, but I want to hear it from him the next time. So it'll be a while before we get him back on, but It was good. Yeah, no, I think that it was entertaining. I think he had fun. You can tell when somebody has fun when they're starting to engage in the conversation as opposed to just answering questions.
Yeah, and following up saying, do I have time for a quick story?
Yeah. Hey, that's it's always a podcast. You know? It's a podcast.
So do you have Boston, Montreal, Ottawa finishing atop the Atlantic Division? Because that's where they are right now, those three teams in top three spots.
I must admit I didn't have Boston, but, you know, you have to be impressed to where they're playing. Montreal and Ottawa, I thought were going to be the cream of the crop, not necessarily in that order. I thought perhaps Ottawa would be the best team in the division if Linus Allmark could get his act together for a long period of time.
Tampa, Florida, Toronto, not in that group right
well,
now.
Florida, I give a pass to because Florida.
Florida's been just fine.
But Florida learns the lesson is that you don't necessarily have to waste time grinding through an 82-game regular season.
Yeah.
Just get into the playoffs and then you got a chance. And that's what Florida does now. And I still have Florida, even after the Sasha Barkov injury, I still have Florida coming out of the East. So.
Where do you have Toronto? We're going to get into this with Mike Seisberger from NHL.com
I think it might be one of the key questions of the NHL season so far is that, you know, the Maple Leafs, there's right now, it doesn't look like there's very much there. And
you know what they lack? Identity. They like don't know who they are.
Well, and it doesn't hurt that, you know, Austin Matthews is out and their number one goalie is out. And there's like they got a point against Los Angeles, but they were tremendously badly outplayed. Tremendously outplayed. The Kings were a better team. So, and that this is following losses to Boston twice and the Carolina Hurricanes. It's not very pleasant in Toronto these days. I said that like an American, Toronto. It's not very pleasant in Toronto these days.
So what do you do? We can talk to Seisberger about it, but I'm wondering, do they need a big trade, a roster adjustment? They just went through that without Mitch Marner returning.
Cliff Fletcher always told me you never make a trade or you never make change after losses because you're gonna react emotionally.
That's what they should bring Cliff back and do a 10-player deal. That's what they need.
Well, they could get Doug Gilmore again, but the problem is that Doug Gilmore is 60.
Can you imagine the capologist sitting in the room going, we're doing a 10-player deal, trying to figure that out? Your head would explode trying to run the numbers on a 10-player deal.
Yeah, well. Anyway, Mike Seisberger, who follows this hockey club pretty well, he will have some interesting thoughts about it, I think.
Yes. There's always one direct path with Mike, and you might take the odd off-ramp, but you always end up right where he wants to go. Mike Seisberger coming up on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Stay with us.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to four games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
Here's Mike Seisberger from NHL.com, and I'm going to start with an admission. John Shannon caught me by surprise. He was on my radio show that I do in Las Vegas, and I brought up how we're approaching American Thanksgiving, and there's no coaches in the hot seat. And he said, no, Toronto.
Your definition of hot seat might be different. I'm not suggesting Craig Berube's anywhere near being fired.
That's where I was going. And you said that there was heat on Berube. So, Zeiss, what's the temperature like in Toronto?
Well,
Thanks for having me on, guys. I thought, you know, listening to the fan base here, that once Mitch Marner left town, everything was going to be honky-dory. Wasn't he the problem? I thought it was a ridiculous narrative from the beginning, and now he's in Vegas, you know, taking Mallard out for dinner every night. I'm sure you walk his dog, you babysit for him. I'm sure all that stuff is going on.
Zeus is great. Zeus is so well behaved.
And, you know, maybe some of us that thought that was a ridiculous narrative, now, when you look at the guys that are left, hey, if Craig Berube, for some reason, you know, something happens with him, then you got to look at Austin Matthews, William Nylander, Morgan Riley, those three guys, they're mowing through coaches. Maybe it's not the coaches. And it's been really, really, I'll tell you what the most distressing thing is. Last year, they followed his blueprint, and up until they hit the juggernaut of Florida, north-south, forecheck, keep it simple, it worked.
Yeah.
They're not listening to him. They don't play that way. Their forecheck is awful. And they brought in guys like, you know, Dakota Joshua. I like him as a person. He's come back from cancer. We all know that. He just hasn't been the player that they're looking for. Michelli has shown signs, but he's had issues. And it all comes back, guys, to why aren't they listening to the coach? And, hey, I mean, how many coaches do you have to go through where you understand maybe it's not the coach and maybe it wasn't Mitch Marner?
So my premise of my conversation on Vegas radio yesterday, Mike, was they're not listening to Craig Berube. And you obviously are agreeing with me that that is a major issue.
Yeah.
So there you go, Darren.
But if Berube has lost the room after a year and a month and a half, so
what's that say?
The players have some serious reflecting to do here.
Yeah.
They're not going to listen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah.
It looks like that, Darren. It does not look healthy.
Are you sure it's not Mitch's fault?
Well, we can blame Mitch,
guys, there was actually, and John knows this from being here in Southern Ontario, there was actually a school of thought, certainly not by me, but people that follow the game closely that thought, you know, Mitch is gone, but they have more money, they have more depth. Well, what's depth going to do if you don't have the same kind of quality? You know, and it's just, if you bring in guys, you know, they wanted to get bigger, they wanted to be better on the forecheck. Well, if you're not playing the dump and chase that makes that effective, if you're not cycling the puck, if you're still trying to do this cutesy east-west stuff in the neutral zone, and get caught in transition at the other team's blue line, then what was the sense of bringing these guys in if you're not going to play that way?
Let me ask you this. How much do they miss Lane Lambert?
I think you have a good case there. He was definitely somebody that brought structure to their game. But, I mean, John, I'm at the point now, this is on the players. You can only go so far before, you know, well, we've gone through these coaches. They've gone through a couple general managers now. Well, you go through this cycle over and over and over again, wash, rinse, repeat, and it's going to have to come on the players. And, you know, you saw last night, the second goal last night by the Kings, they had three chances before the puck went in, right close in front of Dennis Hildeby. He makes one save, comes back out. They shoot again. He makes another save, comes right back out. They put the third one in, Willie Nylander's there on a flyby. He goes to the bench. Berube gives him a tongue lashing. After the game, we asked him about that, and he said, "Oh, I thought Nylander was hurt." Now we know he's protecting Nylander there. Here's the thing, guys, and I've said this about the Leafs for a long time. Now, with the cap going up, this is going to change. But say the last 6 or 7 years, every team has 3 or 4 guys that they pay a lot of money to, that they pay a big chunk. Maybe not how the Leafs did with Tavares and Nylander and Matthews and at the time Marner. But you're choosing to pay 2, 3, 4 guys way more than everybody else. You better be sure, if you're going to put that chunk of your salary cap towards those guys, that not only are they talented guys, because there's lots of talented guys in the league, but are these the guys that have the fire? Okay, we saw that when Tkachuk went to Florida, right, and the cultural change that he has. Let me ask you guys, I think Auston Matthews is a hell of a player, and he cares. I don't like the narrative. Does Nylander have fire?
Auston does care. Mm-hmm. You believe Auston cares? I'm not being cheeky, but you think that there's a lot of concern from Auston, a lot of compete from Auston, a lot of fire from Auston.
Okay, John, there's a difference between, how do I put it, not putting in 100% and what kind of type of person you are, okay? I just don't think that's in his DNA to have that fire. He's not Nathan MacKinnon. He's not Sidney Crosby. But to that point, they couldn't get the C off John Tavares quick enough and put it on this kid.
Yeah.
Okay? And I still do believe that when you put the C on a guy, okay, that still matters. I just don't think it's in his DNA. And William Nylander is one of the most skilled players in this league. But all three of us, I mean, going back to when Darren was in Toronto covering stuff in Southern Ontario.
You mean a huge star?
Yeah.
A huge star.
But we've seen this. I mean, he marches to his own drummer.
Yep.
And they still went out and paid them. So you guys tell me, even when they had Mitch, and Auston and Willie, who's the alpha there?
Well, Mitch was the alpha. Mitch was the alpha.
Nobody in this town was willing to agree to that. They didn't think that. He should have been the first guy that they signed. But that's just my opinion, and it's not a popular one in this town.
We're gonna have to have security Auston Matthews, at your house.
Is Auston Matthews playing well enough when he was healthy? I realize he's out right now, but was he pulling his end? I'm not talking about a 200-foot game.
No, no.
But was he doing his job?
Listen, Auston Matthews, to be good and be effective, has to be scoring.
Yes.
So the obvious answer was he wasn't at the top of his game.
No, he was scoring a bit. My point with him is, does he make the guys around him better? Okay? We've seen over the past, and it's easy to use Sidney Crosby as an example, but Sidney Crosby, we've seen where he goes up to management and said, you know what, put me with a couple of lesser wingers, you know, or maybe younger wingers, so we can spread out, you know, over the lines, have a deeper team. And he makes those guys better. Does Auston Matthews make the guys around him better? I mean, this season we're seeing it, like a kid like Matthew Nyes. I think that he is an ascending player. But even when he was playing with Auston, he wasn't playing that great either. And I think that is something, you know, everybody looked at Auston through a certain lens. And rightly so, from when he came into the league. I mean, He's a unicorn in a lot of ways because of his size, because of his shot. But I had a general manager ask me on Hall of Fame weekend, because they were all in for the GM meetings. He watched the first period and he said, you know, and Matthews scored in this particular game. He goes, but does he really dominate a shift like Nathan MacKinnon does, like Connor McDavid does? Hey, like Connor Bedard has in a couple of games this week. Mm-hmm. And you just don't see that. And I think there has to be a sobering reality among a lot of fans to understand that. And William Nylander is who he is. But when your best players, you don't have an alpha among them, I think that's an issue.
Yeah. By the way, the shot attempts last night, I think, were 87 to 32. I mean, was there any doubt in your mind when the Kings got it close that the Kings were going to win?
No, not at all. And look at, we've talked about Nylander. We've talked about Matthews, who's injured and coming back. And look at, this is not on them. I mean, we discussed that.
Well, part of it is on them.
But John, okay, these guys cannot clear their own zone. Okay, they try to flip pucks up out. They can't even get it over the head of the defenseman. I mean, at times it looks like beer league, and Berube sees it. Everybody sees it.
Okay, so yeah. Who's at fault here?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, Darren. I mean, I'm not trying to pass the buck, but I don't even think Craig Berube knows. And here's the interesting thing. Okay. Our friend Keith Pelly, who all three of us have known for a while, we saw after the season, he was sitting in the stands against Florida when those Leaf jerseys went fluttering down on the ice. And the thing about that is, you know, Pelly's looking there. That's his brand that's fluttering down there, okay? And that's the biggest gut punch you can have. He's watching this. They can't, again, it reminds me of Florida, that where they can't even clear their own end. And I know they don't have Tanev, but what the Toronto Maple Leafs look like right now is an old, slow team. And maybe that's what they are. So your Pelly, you came in, you say, you know, this is not acceptable.
Well, Keith started the season by saying this is go time.
Yeah.
This is now. We're going to win now. I mean, Keith in many ways has put his own reputation on the line by saying things like that. Mm-hmm.
But it goes deeper than the coach. So if these people that want to say, oh, maybe it's Berube. So who's the next guy that comes in? They tried to play run and gun under Sheldon. Now they come, Sheldon Keefe. Now they come in and they have Craig Berube. And actually, when they played north-south last year, it worked. Mm-hmm. And now it's not. And one other thing to this. The goaltending, and not Hildeby, but Stolarz, has not been the Stolarz that we saw last season. And there have been games where that, not last night and not the last couple. He didn't play last night. He's injured, obviously, but goaltending wasn't the reason that they've lost the last couple. But earlier in the season, when they needed a save, they weren't getting it. And, mm-hmm. I go back to a game where after the game, Stolarz kind of called out his teammates for not being there to protect them and stuff like that.
Right.
I wonder, and Darren, you're a goaltender by trade. Did that backfire? Do you think that?
I didn't like it, but I understood it and I appreciated it.
Yeah.
And at least somebody said something publicly, mm-hmm. which is apparently lacking in and around that group. And I don't think it backfired. It just didn't work, which says a lot about the rest of the group.
Mm-hmm.
So the other, but the other thing about this is that this team was supposed to, you know, the Stanley Cup champions are the Florida Panthers for a reason, and they play a tough brand of hockey. They play a tough brand of hockey. The Maple Leafs were supposed to play a tougher brand of hockey.
Yep.
Look what Boston, look what Boston went out and did. I mean, you know, they got Tanner Janot off the scrap heap. Tanner Janot's been pretty effective for the Bruins so far this season. I understand your comments.
Risky move because they were buying low there.
I know.
But they paid a pretty penny for him too.
Sure they did. But your point about Dakota Joshua is a fair one. But you know, Nick Waugh was supposed to be a little tougher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was supposed to be some much better gravitas with this hockey club, a grittier style, a Craig Berube style.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond the big three, because we can call them the big three now, beyond the big three, I don't see any of that.
No.
I don't see, and which, and the reason I bring it up is that I don't think Anthony Stolarz saw it either.
No.
Which is what ticked him off.
Well, we have a running joke now that, you know, when there's scrambles around the Leafs net, they'll get tough with the other team's forwards after the whistle. So the whistle will go, and then they'll jostle guys out of the way. But before that, there's guys right there. Corey Perry a couple times. Now, there's only – Corey Perry's one of one, as we know. But a couple times during those jostling incidents, he's skating behind the goalie and out the other side.
You know what? I love Corey Perry.
I do, too.
I really do. I enjoyed him.
Why haven't they brought him here? Well, in the last 5-6 years.
If you recall, and it's not on Brad, if you recall, Corey wanted to play here.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, Kyle didn't have any interest in Corey, and he signed to Montreal.
So here's something I'll throw at you. And I think all three of us know this as a fact, that the Leafs were hard in on Brad Marchand.
Yep.
And he very well may have come here if Bill Zito hadn't pulled a rabbit out of his hat and given him this contract. I think he's going to be, 83 by the time the contract ends?
He'll be getting his full pension, yeah.
But
82 and a half, if you want to be accurate.
If Brad Marchand was in Toronto, and that's a big if, if, ands, or buts, we know all that, but if he had come to Toronto, would the culture be any different in that dressing room? What do you guys think?
Well, I think there'd be more fire.
Yeah.
Just because of him. Mm-hmm. Never mind whether anybody follows him, but there's more fire and more involvement
mm-hmm.
with him. And I don't know why that's a hard thing for players to do, especially the bottom six or your fourth line, to go out and do. Just bring some energy, some atmosphere, and drag people into the fight. You don't have to score 60 goals, but drag people into the fight.
And I
don't see that.
No. And I really do think, again, you guys have been in this market. You know, you both know what it's like here at home. I really do think deep down inside that's what that's the type of thing Maple Leaf fans appreciate. Like the other night, you know, they honor a military person every night at a home game. And the other night, Wendell Clark comes out and gives them a jersey.
Yeah.
And the place goes bonkers every time they see Wendell. And one of the opposing GM came up to me and he goes, you know, the way these people act, you would think that Wendell Clark should be in the Hall of Fame. And then you look at his numbers. They're not bad. There's no way they're near Hall of Fame. But why did they love him? Because he wore his heart on his sleeve and he played his butt off. It's the same with Darcy Tucker. They love Darcy Tucker now. You know, he does the same thing with the military, you know, when they honor him and Darcy comes out and gives him a jersey. The ovation now, they love him more now than they did when he played. Because whether you liked his tactics or not, He always wore his heart on his sleeve. And I think, you know, now, after these people have been sold a bill of goods over and over again, they're looking at this team and they're not seeing that. And I think that's where the fan base is finally starting to get disgruntled with the whole operation.
From afar.
Mm-hmm.
And Mitch took the bulk of the blame, and it's a big reason why Mitch decided not to, yep, to return there. Has the fan base realized their error by just targeting a player or a couple of players and then having them walk out the door? Is that why we don't see Willie Nylander or Morgan Riley or Austin Matthews taking the brunt of this thing?
No, and I don't really sense that.
I was hopeful that there'd be one little gleam of, hey, we've learned from
this is how silly it is. And I'm not going to say which network or radio station it was, but one of the local places actually put up a thing, biggest villain athlete in Toronto sports history. And one of the choices was Mitch. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, there's actually people, oh, he knew he wasn't coming back. He quit on the team. Well, you know what? If a guy puts up 102 points, that's a hell of a way to quit on your team. You know, nobody ever brings up that this kid 2 years ago was a finalist for the Selke. And it befuddles me because, you know, this is such a hockey hotbed, as we all know. And for the most part, people are educated, and I've never understood, maybe, you know, sometimes Mitch was a little awkward in the things that he said. I always laugh about when he said, you know, in Toronto, you know, you do well, we get treated like gods. And the way that was translated in a lot of media circles was that, oh, he thinks he's a god. No. You guys, John, you live in the Toronto area. Darren, you live there for I don't know how long. He's right. They do get treated like gods. Okay? He's not, he didn't.
Well, you just talked about Wendell and Darcy. They're still.
He didn't call himself a god, but that's the way it was produced.
Yeah. The other aspect.
I think the best thing that ever happened to Mitch, because I happen to like Mitch a lot, is that he left and went to Vegas. And it's too bad because he was a homegrown kid. He grew up watching the Leafs. Were there warts? Yes. Could he have played better in the playoffs? Of course. He deserved criticism for that. But I'll tell you what, Nylander and Matthews didn't get nearly the amount of criticism that Mitch did. Am I wrong, John?
No, that's a fair comment. The other aspect of this is 15 years ago, the market was so tough that the standard line was free agents will never sign in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Free agent, it's going to be tough to sign in Toronto. Nobody wants to play in Toronto. Nobody wants to play in the fishbowl. Well, you know, over those years, guys like Kyle Dubas and Lou Lamoriello, you know, worked on it and disproved that mm-hmm. and Brendan Shanahan made this place an attractive place to sign.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder now if there's regression.
Well, there is, because a player told me that this summer.
I wonder now how difficult it will be with all the money that this company has and makes when they have some space, how difficult it will be to sign free agents again. I do think it's going to be a factor.
Yeah. And you know what? It's too bad too. I mean, here's an example. Last night, Warren Fogle and Quentin Byfield walked into of the Los Angeles Kings, walked into the arena last night,
yeah,
wearing the jerseys of their minor league teams.
Yeah.
Quentin cool. Byfield, York Simcoe.
Yeah.
Fogle, St. Andrews.
It was so cool. There's,
you know, Drew Doughty was talking about how many friends and family he has there. So there is, like you said, with Brendan Shanahan, he turned, for all you want to say about Shanny, and there were mistakes made, but he did make it an attractive place to play. You have guys like John Tavares that took a big time haircut to stay here. And I'll tell you what, of all the negatives that we talk about the Maple Leafs, I give John a lot of credit. He's playing as good hockey as
I am. But he's not an alpha.
No. But I will tell you this, Darren. John Tavares, after every loss, even though they took the C off of him, is the first guy out there to address the media.
Yeah.
He's a very, very accountable guy. But to your point, John, I mean, so you couple what you're saying that both you guys, that maybe it's not the most attractive place to come now, with the fact that look at how many free agents are staying where they are. So it's going to be a watered down free agent thing anyways. And I never thought that we'd get to this point in the game, but is there going to come to a point where teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs have all this money and don't have anybody to spend it on?
Well, when the cap sorts out and there's teams that can't spend to the limit, they will have an advantage and they will be able to buy their way into
players. But then you tend to overpay for players that aren't worth it. Yeah. You tend to overpay for guys that aren't worth it.
Will the elite guys be there, Darren?
Pardon me?
Will the elite guys be there, though? The top-end guys?
Yeah, and I wonder, is that the problem anyway right now?
Yeah. Now, when we're talking about, just a quick point, when we're talking about the narrative of, you know, Southern Ontario market and the pressure and stuff like that. So just a quick story. So a week ago today, I was at the Kitchener Auditorium where Pete DeBoer was being, they're starting a thing. Bob McKenzie's son, Mike, is the general manager of the Kitchener Rangers. They've started something called the Wall of Legends. And Pete DeBoer was the first guy to go in there. They had a ceremony. He led the Kitchener Rangers of the Ontario Hockey League to the Memorial Cup in 2003. So during the game, when there's a stoppage on the scoreboard, they do Q&As with some of the players that they filmed during the week in that. And one of the questions, and, you know, there's 6,000-7,000 people in the rink. There's a break in the action. You look up on the scoreboard, and one of the questions is, somebody puts a microphone in front of two of the players and say, will Connor McDavid be a Maple Leaf in 2 years? I mean, let's just stoke the flames.
Yeah.
Okay? Welcome to Southern Ontario.
Now, we are only 6 weeks in to the season. Yeah.
And it is such a strange season. It is such a strange season. By the way,
even if Connor wants to leave, and hey, I mean, who knows what's going to happen to him? You really think he wants to come home when he sees the state of that team? Now,
everybody
a year and a half out, and like you guys say, it's strange.
Well, it's actually 2.5 years out.
Yeah.
2.5 years.
We'll see.
How does it get fixed? If we're talking in January and things have turned around, what has caused the turnaround? Size.
They listen to the coach. They play the way that they played last year.
And that's fair, because a player told me last year that it was a totally different team, much different opposition to play against than they had before. Mm-hmm. It was like they just put different jerseys on another team because of how hard the Toronto Maple Leafs played. So you're deeply on target on that.
They can win this way. I'm not saying they're going to Stanley Cup, but they can win if they play the way the coach wants them to.
Or are they just now not a 100-point team? Are they just a 500 team? And are we talking about a team that's going to get 86 points, 82 points?
I'm not sure they're a 100-point team, John. I do think that if they play the way the coach wants them to, I never thought that they would win this division, but I think that they're a playoff team. I still think there's enough talent there, but not the way they're trying to play.
No. And there should be regression, right? You lose a 100-point player, you have to back up a little bit.
You would think so, but that wasn't necessarily the narrative in this market. The narrative was, and I know John has heard this, well, they're a deeper team. They might have lost this guy, but they're a deeper team in the second, third, fourth line, which will make them harder to play against. And look, if you know, let's go to revisionist history. They win the first two games against Florida. They had a couple of chances in game three in overtime. I remember one where William Nylander had a partial breakaway, you know, and all of a sudden, bad Bob turned into good Bob for the rest of the series. But they score there and they're up 3-0. Not saying they're going to win, but, you know, Florida's margin for error changes. Now, again, that's a what if, but it does show that when they play the way the coach wants them to play, they can be effective.
And what was the, by the way, what was the question you asked 30 minutes ago? Is the coach on the hot seat?
No, I asked why you got Darren up so early because he had to cover the game late last night.
It is.
And by the way, Darren, I'm just wondering, are they counting down, instead of counting down the days to Thanksgiving in Vegas, are they counting down the days till Carter Hart can start playing?
Carter Hart is eligible on December 1st.
Sure, but they know that.
Goaltending has not been, without Aiden Hill, has not been the Achilles heel in Vegas. They haven't been able to score enough. And they've had games in the third period tied on regularity, and they haven't been able to get that perfect moment for the puck to hit the back of the net. I will say that they're 7-4-5. Like they play the fewest games in the National Hockey League.
Not everybody can be Colorado.
No. And they're in a good spot. And compared to what we've just spent half an hour talking about, they're even better. Let's take a break. We'll come back more with Mike Zeisberger. A couple of things I want to get to, including Larry Brooks, when we continue on 100% Hockey with Martin Shannon. You brought up Brad Marchand. Perfect timing. How about 1,000 points? And I don't know whether there's a more beloved guy who's ever played that style. And I know he's changed a little bit, evolved, but some of the accolades he's getting now, from another Stanley Cup to 1,000 points, to being a leader with that hockey club, and then still flashing back with the tearing apart of the helmet in Buffalo. 1,000 points. How significant is it, you guys?
It's very significant. And I mean, there's been so few players.
More so for him?
Yeah.
Well, the way he plays, yes.
Right.
The way he plays, yes. You know, because...
Look, we're not that long removed from him licking people. And that was disgusting. I remember, you know, our friend Butch Cassidy, Bruce, the coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, pulling him over and say, Brad, we need you to play on the edge. That is way over the edge. Okay? But how this guy has morphed and changed himself is amazing, because he was one of the most despised players in the league, not only to play against, but from just an image, fans, like, you know, licking people. He
didn't know where the line was.
No, he had a couple of suspensions.
Yeah.
And the fact that not only did he change the image to, as you said, Darren, he found where the line is now. But at the same time, the effectiveness. All of a sudden, he went from being a third or fourth liner when the Bruins won the Cup in 11 to being a first liner. Mm-hmm. And being a game changer. You know, I thought it was remarkable last year, game 5 in Edmonton of the Stanley Cup final. And there was a buzz and electricity in that arena that I haven't really sensed in a long, long time. It was really cool, because if you recall the year before, Edmonton was down 3-0. So they were chasing it the whole time. So even when they went back to Edmonton for game 6, and it was a great atmosphere, but they weren't in a position to grab a stranglehold
right.
that series. Game five in Edmonton last year, they're coming in there. It's 2-2, okay? I mean, you know, people there are like, we win this one, baby. We've got a stranglehold on this. And then Brad Marchand, in a game that you have Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, you know, arguably the best three players in the league. Connor, for sure, for me, is, you know, the most talented player I've ever seen. And Brad Marchand scored two highlight reel goals and is laughing on the bench. And it's like, pressure? Let's bring it on, baby. Like, come on, you know? And I was so impressed by that, because you could argue that nobody in this league now handles pressure in the big moments better than Brad Marchand. Now, if I would have said that to you 6 years ago, my image would have been blanked off this Zoom immediately, because it's like, we don't need a ludicrous statement like that. Look what this look what this guy has turned himself into.
And yeah, leader.
I will say this real quick. He trains with Crosby every summer out in the Halifax area. Mm-hmm. You start wondering, and you see the way that Nate MacKinnon is too. We talked about how Crosby elevates his teammates. Maybe he elevates the guys that, you know, his friends and stuff like that too, because, hey, and I think one of the big things, and Brad will tell you this, is when he scored the winning goal in the World Cup in 2016 for Canada. Because he was thrilled just to put that jersey on. And the fact that who was the team he scored against? Was it the world team?
Yes, it was.
Team Europe.
Team Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
You know, nobody will remember that. But for him, that was such a boost of, you know what? I do belong here. I can be an elite player. And he's taken off on that. And It's a remarkable story. And I'll say this, people are debating whether he should be on Team Canada. Talking to some of the people around the team or a couple of the coaches. Brad Marchand and Drew Doughty were the two loud voices in an otherwise quiet Team Canada dressing room at the Four Nations. And not quiet because nobody cares, but Connor's quiet, Sid's quiet. When they speak up, everybody listens. But they're not the guys ribbing their own teammates, making jokes, stuff like that. And that has traction. So good on Brad, and let's hope that he doesn't lick anybody anymore.
Yeah. By the way, I think what Brad Marchand has done, and I'm glad you brought up the World Cup, because it was around that time that he really did start to transform his image, even though the licking was after. He's a case study. There's got to be some, university that can do an MBA study on how Brad Marchand has changed this image to the point now where, if I would have told you 10 years ago Brad Marchand was going to be in TV commercials, there was going to be no chance he was in TV commercials. Now he's in TV commercials.
Changed his image without changing
his style of hockey.
His style, yeah.
Right.
He's still an effective player.
It really is a fascinating story of human development.
So let me ask you guys this, and in no way to the extent that it is with Marchand, but is Tom Wilson starting to change the narrative around him?
Well, he's
making, I don't
better
think
Tom, choices. I think Tom, he's making better choices physically.
Yeah.
But is he a better hockey? Is he now, you look at him and go, you know what? He's a hell of a hockey player. He's a top six forward.
He is to me. Always has been. It was just always whether or not been? He could control. As a hockey player, yeah. But the choices he would make physically and hitting people always drew him back.
But the question,
so, John, he's always been a top six.
I think he's always had the talent. The question has always been is, can he monitor himself?
Yeah.
And can he make sure that, you know, he has to be able to, you have to be able to know with Tom that he won't color outside the lines.
There we go. Like Brad, where's the line? Yeah,
that's right.
Totally.
So, and so if you have 100%
hockey
confidence in what Tom Wilson does on the ice, he's a hell of a hockey player. Mm-hmm. But if you have doubt and you start to think, well, Tom's going to make one stupid move. He's going to make one stupid play. He's going to hit somebody in the head. He's going to play outside that line. Then you can't have him on the team, Mike. You can't have him on the team.
I will say this. I'm fairly confident that come Milan, both those guys will be on the team.
And let's just make sure that they play within the lines, right? That really is the
well, if the arena,
and there's nothing wrong.
Let's hope there's arena with lines.
Yeah, that's right.
And go back to the Toronto conversation. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with pushing the envelope.
No.
In fact, in Toronto, we would all say they need somebody to push it.
Yeah.
And those two guys do that.
Yeah.
They've just learned how to not rip it up.
Look, if we, you know, circling back to the Leafs, they thought they had that guy in Nazem Kadri. They really did. I mean, not to the same extent, but
yes,
somebody that brought that kind of kick, that oomph.
And the Nazem Kadri, if they had Nazem Kadri today, the answer is yes. Because the Naz that's playing in Calgary is an asset to a hockey club.
But then
when Naz was playing here in Toronto, he wasn't always an asset.
Well, he got himself taken out of town because in two consecutive years, he got suspended for hits. And we focused in on it at the TD Garden in Boston on the same panel of boards, two consecutive years, he ran guys in there. And it's funny that the narrative people seem to forget, you know, like, why, oh, what a mistake. They got rid of Kadri. At that time, everybody in the city wanted him out.
Exactly.
The argument, I think, where the flaw was is, did they get enough in return? And Tyson Barrie was never, and I love Tyson. He's one of the best people that I've dealt with in hockey. But he was never the player that they expected him to
be. Well, it didn't help when Mike Babcock turned to him and said, what are you doing here?
Who do you like more right now?
Different chapter.
Yeah, I know.
Who do you like more, Edmonton or Toronto? Or who do you dislike more right now, the way they're playing?
They have the most talented player I've ever seen. So as long as he's there, I will pick him.
Seems to be something a little odd there.
Yeah, it does. Let's see. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that this is the beat all to end all. But when Zach Hyman comes back.
Yes.
That changes the dynamic, not only on the ice, but in the dressing room. Is it enough? Yeah. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I still think there needs to be moves. I don't understand. What are we now? Into our third year where the Oilers have been contenders, where we question Stuart Skinner and the goaltending. Yeah, I understand. Here's the thing about Stuart Skinner. I give him credit that he was the main goaltender to get to the Stanley Cup final for two consecutive years. You know, there's good Stew and there's bad Stew. But in the Stanley Cup final last year, you can talk about how Florida shut down Edmonton and maybe Edmonton's big guns didn't show up. Edmonton, every single game, all six games, allowed at least two goals in the first period.
That was right.
You're chasing the game, okay? How do you kind of take the wind out of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl? Force them to play that way. And then you can line up five guys at your blue line in the neutral zone, and the second there's a turnover, and it doesn't necessarily have to be those two guys, boom, it's going the other way.
Yeah.
So
Zach
why
Hyman, former Toronto Maple Leaf, former Toronto Maple Leaf is Zach Hyman as well. Hey, just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. Mike, before we finish, Larry Brooks passed away yesterday. Your careers in many ways were parallel. He's a little older than you, but you were around Larry a lot. I think you had a great deal of respect for Larry.
Mm-hmm.
What will you miss the most without Larry Brooks?
Larry was always supportive of a young journalist. You know, I don't know if I would have always picked the same fights that Larry did, but I will say this. Larry believed in every one of those battles, even when him and Torch were going at it. He believed that he was right. His columns were must read. You might not agree with them, but you always knew that's what Larry believed. And I'll always remember how good he was to me when I was coming up in the business. That's not anything that you forget very quickly. And, you know, it was shocking because I had seen that he had left for health reasons. But I think we were all shocked at how quickly this happened. And rest in peace, Larry Brooks, because, guys, you know, as much as we look at the New York market and say, oh, this is a bustling hockey place, in the mainstream New York media, whether it's on radio, like in New York radio, other than when Boomer Esiason is on the radio, they don't talk about hockey much. And on TV, unless you're watching a specialty channel, they don't talk about hockey much. Larry Brooks was iconic in that he was kind of the foundation of hockey coverage. And if people in New York wanted to know what was going on in the game, they would go and look at Larry. And I think that when you consider, you know, the media capital of the world, that he was able to put down a foundation like that, that says a lot. So rest in peace, my friend.
What gave him the fortitude? I'm not sure there's an answer that I really... What gave him the fortitude to be as confident as he was with all the information? And because we've been around writers all our career. Not every writer stands up to everybody else. You know, when a coach goes off on a tangent, lots of people cower. Larry never cowered. What gave him that fortitude?
I'm not exactly sure, but it's funny that you bring that up because we were watching a video. You remember when Jim Schoenfeld
referee? He was smack in the middle of it. He was the PR guy for the Devils at the time.
Called him fat, called the referee fat. Was that the donut gate?
Have another donut, you fat pig.
And if you look at it, there's Brooksy right in the middle of that.
Yeah.
He was the PR guy for the New Jersey Devils. And I was thinking about his feistiness in his next career as being a columnist. And I thought, how apropos that Brooksy was in the middle of that, because he would have loved it. Yeah. Okay. A lot of guys would have like shriveled like the Wicked Witch of the West into a puddle. Not Brooksy. And there was that same feistiness. Hey, maybe it's because of Jim Schoenfeld. Who knows? I'm just joking about that. But I don't know. I really don't, John. But you know, whether you agreed with it or not, he came honestly by it. And it wasn't like he ran hot or cold. The next time he faced somebody, he wouldn't stand up. Larry stood up every single time. And he was consistent in that. And again, what he did for young journalists and stuff and his support, we'll never, never forget it.
You read Larry for Larry as much as you did the content. Mm-hmm. Right.
Every now and then you'd read his column and you'd see an item and you go, oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
This is a little seed in the beanstalk that's going to sprout in the next week. Okay. What kind of, there are, you know, whether it's ESPN or TSN or Sportsnet, there are entire shows of Brooksy versus Torts. Okay. And I happened to be at one of them. And what you had is, you know, neither one of them would ever admit it, but they were almost the same person when it comes to that regard, because they were not going to back down.
And I don't think you could be Larry Brooks today. If you're breaking into the business, I don't think you could tackle the position or dip your toe into the career the same way that Larry Brooks did.
Well, but hold on.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Well, you know, this was 50 years in the making, Darren.
Yes.
50 years. You know, right. Larry Brooks was not this way on the first Ranger game he covered. He was close.
Yeah, it took at least three.
Yeah, that's right. So, I have a bias, but I think there are only two guys in my time around the game that
Al Strachan
were at
this level. I knew you were going to say.
Is that Al Strachan and Larry Brooks. I must say, when Larry Brooks passed and we got talking about what Larry did, I thought a lot about Al and what Al did both in print and then for us on television all those years. You know, both of these guys had big cojones.
And again, John.
Big cojones.
Again, John, Al was a colleague of mine at the Toronto Sun. And did I agree with everything that Al said or wrote? No. Was Al amazing to me? Al opened doors for me and introduced me to people around the NHL, including Wayne Gretzky. You know, I'd had dealings with Wayne before, but I still had the, you know, I was young. I still had the Google eyes. Like,
yeah, Al blessed you.
And Al opened doors and took time. And now, if Al would try to help you, but it was only so much, you had to, you know, here's the rope. You grab it and you take it. If you didn't, okay, fine. Then the opportunity wasn't coming again. But I saw it as somebody that was trying to help my career. And I will be forever grateful to Al for doing that. I worked with him, obviously, a lot closer than I did with Brooksy, but they shared that same thing. If you were willing to work and you wanted to set up a network of contacts with hockey people, and with both of them, it was very yin or yang, okay? It wasn't like they were going to introduce you to everybody in hockey, because half the people in hockey didn't like either one of them. But the people that did, and there was a lot of high, powerful people in the game.
Yeah.
It was an amazing opportunity, and I'll always be thankful to Al for that.
Well, the good news is Al is still with us, but unfortunately Larry is not. And Larry, I told this story a couple times the last few days. Larry was one of the very few Americans ever to make it on the satellite hot stove.
Well, if you can win Shannon over with something like that, then you know you've got to be pretty damn good.
I loved reading Larry Brooks, and I still love reading Kevin Paul DuPont. So there you go.
There you go. And they all got those Blazers that we saw on Monday at the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Be well, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen. And he scores! Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
I love catching up with Zeiss. I really do. He's one of those guys where I'll end up talking to and then look at my watch and go, we just spent 45 minutes hanging out. And I don't get to see him nearly as much as I was like,
I think, you know, it's funny, in talking about Larry Brooks, the way we did, Mike Zeisberger has an amazing personality that has really endeared himself to almost everybody in the hockey industry. You know,
everybody likes Mike.
Yes, he downplayed his, you know, his connections with people like Wayne, but you know, the amount of people that Mike Zeisberger knows and can deal with and talk to on a personal level is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And again, it's taken decades to do, but I would say that he's probably one of the most likable people in the hockey industry in 2025.
The athletes.
And by the way, Mike. he can still be critical of people. Mm-hmm. And yet there's that personal touch that Mike has created with everybody that really is his strongest suit.
Well, he's not happy with the Toronto Maple Leafs right now.
I kind of gathered that.
And he's not putting on the coach, and I'm glad to hear that. Because Craig Berube was brought in there with one mandate, to get them to play harder. And he's asking them to do that. They bought in last year, and for some reason it's backed off. And if he has to yell and scream and kick garbage cans, I'm all for it to get them to go.
Don't
fall back. Why would you fall back on that? Why would you retreat on that message?
The relentless nature of standing behind a bench and consistently yelling all the time will fall on deaf ears at a certain point. And now I worry for Craig that it's already occurred. That's my only point. You wonder if it's already occurred that the players are tuning him out. Because you can only... Darren, we've seen this thousands of times with coaches. That
not after 13 months, though.
Well, I'm just saying that the messaging and finding ways to deliver the message, it's a real challenge. You are more of a psychologist than you are a strategist when you're a coach in the National Hockey League right now.
I get that on almost every level, in every situation,
yeah.
Except this one. He was hired with that mandate.
Not by this administration.
Getting all fancy.
No,
multi-syllable words.
Brendan Shanahan was the president of the hockey club when Craig Berube got hired.
Mm. Hey, did you like the way I was chiming in with hockey after 100%?
Well, you know, it's the new brand new drinking game. That every time somebody in an interview says 100%, you say hockey, because there are phrases that get overused and overused. The best phrase that's overused these days is, well, at the end of the day, everybody says it. And so,
are you talking about announcers?
Announcers, interviews, if you watch an interview, somebody eventually say, well, you know, at the end of the day, but a lot of also people say, rather than yes or no, they'll say, do you agree with the coach being tough? 100%. So every time you get an opportunity when somebody says 100%, it's your job to chime in with that one simple little word right after. Hockey.
Hockey.
That's right.
Shout out to a friend of mine, Dale Lewis, who is from Verdon, Manitoba. He sent me a picture and a note about the Wayne Gretzky conversation. Big Wayne Gretzky fan. And he was just enthralled with the conversation we had with 99. But he was listening to it while he was driving to Winnipeg. Manitoba.
You know what that means. He went by that darn tree.
He went by the halfway tree and sent a picture because of our conversation. Well,
our pal Huey, the producer, is going to put it into the show right here, right now.
And he knows Zach Whitecloud from Whitecloud's time in Verdon. So he said, say hi to Whitey. So I said, went over and talked to Zach, and I said, he sent me a picture of the halfway tree. And you know what Whitey said?
No.
The tree that's not halfway.
Oh, there you go.
So you guys are on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. So, I always Dale, liked Zach Whitecloud.
Thanks for the note, Dale. And I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Mike Zeisberger. We'll be back with more. Can't wait to talk to you next time. Continued interaction with you. Our DMs are open, as well as share and subscribe to the podcast. It's 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.